Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power Your Life Radio Show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, and certified coach, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and well-being in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Hello, this is Dr. Joanne White, and I am very happy to be here today because I have two wonderful guests to help you demystify the whole social media buzz, and it really is a buzz. I have on the line here Rita Christensen, who's the founder and the CEO of iColor Studio, a company that was started in 1999. Rita Christensen initially began her career in the medical publishing field as a book designer, and then she spent 17 years raising two wonderful children, and then returned again as an art director for an advertising agency and opened her own firm 2 years later. Rita Christensen is also an adjunct instructor at Camden County College, and she was the first instructor in the country to teach podcasting. She also teaches computer graphics, web media, and digital illustration. And on the line along with Rita is Wendy Maginero, who is another partner at iColor Studio. Wendy is wonderful as she consults and populates firms on marketing through mass media appeal and industry-specific social media outlets. Her clients are growing and growing, and in addition, she works with nonprofits like the Sunshine Foundation, John Brooks Recovery Center, and the Atlantic City Ballet to help them increase their exposure in the support of fundraising efforts. Wendy also manages many businesses in many kinds of sectors, and what she does is help them infuse both branding and personality into their social media campaigns, and most importantly, driving results. So, hello, folks, and thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
Good afternoon,
thank
Joanne.
You.
Rita, yeah, thank you.
My
we
pleasure.
We actually have a funny story for you, Joanne. This is Rita speaking. Wendy and I, about a month ago, we stepped back in time 300 years, and we actually had a town crier, a colonial town crier, cry about our business. So we went through back 300 years, and now we're in, you know, this whole new generation and this whole new millennia of social media, which includes podcasting.
Well, I think social media is so important. There's even that new film that came out about the beginnings of Facebook. And I was doing a little bit of research and found out that some of these social media sites get over 5 million visitors daily. That's pretty outstanding. So I know that you folks have helped me sort of demystify social media, and I've been called technologically challenged by some. So today, I hope it's our goal to help the listeners get more understanding and how they can use social media to really boost up their business. So one of my first questions is, why is social media so important? And is it important for all businesses or just for some target businesses?
I'll answer that. I think depending on the forum, Facebook is obviously the largest right now, and there's so many. We do primarily focus on Facebook and Twitter, but not to disregard the others. Is that people now are saying, where everything used to be direct marketing and the companies would just go, okay, we're putting an ad in the paper, we're going to put a commercial up on TV, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And really, where was your real results feedback? The difference now is that it's so important for every company to be on, because now you can have a one-on-one relationship pretty much with all of your customers. And your customers can now let you know directly what they like, what they don't like, how it affects them, good, bad, indifferently. And you as a company, all companies now have the power to be able to say, you know what, our customers aren't buying this, or our customers do like this, they don't like this, and we're getting live feedback every day from this. And that to me is a great Facebook or Twitter account, is that where you're putting out this information, your great content, you're engaging people, and they go, yeah, we like this, we don't. And you can go back and say, okay, this is working and this isn't. So every business, I think, wants to be able to know what works for them and what doesn't. So I think it's important for every sector.
Right, that's great. But how often do people really need to interface with social media? Daily, 5 times a day, weekly? What's the protocol?
It depends on the business. For the accounts that I've run, in the winter, I'm going to honestly say that you probably should be on it a little bit more on the weekends. People are more in, and, of course, with smartphones, even if they're out, they're going to get it. In the summer, depending on the business, you may want to talk more on the weekends. But really, Monday through Friday, I say that the thing about it, it is being about being social. And just like you would return a phone call within 24 hours, if you have people responding to your page and talking and everything, you want to get back to them within 24 hours and let them know your comments or your thoughts on the engagement that you have going on that Facebook page or the Twitter account or whatever.
How do you get back to all those visitors? Let's say you have 100 or thousands of visitors. How do you make that work and manage a business and your time and a family and everything else that you're doing?
It can be overwhelming. And like I said, what it really boils down to, as long as you get back at least once a day. And what happens is because you're only putting in for Facebook, I do recommend that if you're going to populate a Facebook campaign or write engaging questions and everything, that you do it once a day, put your questions and comments out there, and by the next day go back and read all the questions and comments and see if things are something that you need to respond to. And it's amazing, because it's social media, how many of your fans will engage each other. And sometimes you don't necessarily have to have an answer or result. You'll just see what everybody else does. But still, to say that your fans or the people who like your Facebook page or Twitter account, they want to know and feel like they're being paid attention to. So, again, you should be perusing it, making it part of your daily schedule to do that for at least you can do it in 20 or 30 minutes. And there are different applications that you can kind of go and look at it in a swell sweep to go, okay, let me go through this. I use one of those applications and been certified in it, because that's the reason why I'm able to manage all the accounts that I do. So it's at least every 24 hours you should be looking and paying attention. A dead page is just that. You're not going to get the results that you need on Facebook or even on a Twitter account if you're not putting anything out and looking at it.
So, Wendy, I have one more question for you. When you're managing other people's accounts, I know that you've been helping me a lot. Do you go on that level of consistency and respond to people? How do you manage other people's accounts?
Absolutely. I'm on it's so funny because my friends I do Facebook and Twitter from a different level, so it's really funny. My friends will be like, well, didn't you see it streamed? I posted this. I have no clue what my friends are posting on Facebook because I look at it, I'm looking at it at a marketing standpoint, and we don't do direct marketing out there on Facebook and Twitter. I always recommend my clients do settable indirect marketing where they ask pointed questions, and then at the end of can then say, okay, by the way, we have this item available. But I do go on. I respond to every comment if it needs to be responded to on Facebook and Twitter for all of my clients every day. Every 24 hours, all the accounts are checked. And if it is industry specific, where I would not know the answer, it's something that's not like a general question, I email that to the client so that they know that I need a response back within 24 hours, and then I can post it for them. But I do go on. I spend hours and hours behind the house, so to speak, to make sure that all the accounts are going well.
That's a mammoth job, really. That's great. Rita, you're the one who began iColor Studio. What was your vision? And how did you and Wendy pair up to be partners? Is there a story behind that?
There is a story behind that. We laugh about it all the time, actually, because we don't know when the golden moment was, but Wendy saw me give a presentation on podcasting, and we've trademarked the name The Podcator, where we're able to train people in podcasting how to create a podcast, where we promote podcasts on one of our social media sites, The Podcator. And we tell people what to listen to, what will bring enrichment in their life, or what will bring them business success. And so we promote, we train, and we produce podcasts for some of our clients. So Wendy saw me give a talk on this down in Ocean County last year, came up to me and said, "I get what you're doing." And podcasting is just a piece of the whole social media industry. The Facebook, the Twitter, the LinkedIn, podcasting is, when I describe podcasting to my students at school, the blog is actually the father of podcasting. Podcasting gave the blog, the written word, an audio or a video file to attach to it. So Wendy said, I am very passionate about social media, and she really had a vision last year, and she said, "I'm not sure if Mark, the founder of Facebook, had the same vision. You know, it was all related to social networking in colleges and developing relationships and friendships. And I don't know if he saw this vision with the business, but it's starting to spring forward. And I really get this, Rita." So it was just a natural thing to invite Wendy to become my partner. Because now we have the full tilt, the whole social media spectrum to offer our clients. And I just wanted to piggyback on the value of social media to me as a business person and as a lay person. I often go back to a kid when I was in first grade. I got a box of Cracker Jacks without the prize in it. And my lovely mother of 10 kids wrote to Mr. Cracker Jacks and said, "Hey, my kid is crying. She doesn't have a prize in her Cracker Jack box." And one day when I came home from school, perhaps maybe, remember shipping and handling took 6 to 8 weeks or whatever, maybe 8 weeks later I get this box full of Cracker Jack prizes. Now today you can go to the company's website, and they have listeners and they have people and they have teams. We also work with a team of people. We can't do it all ourselves. We have a dashboard that we look at. We have all kinds of tools that help us review all the comments on social media. But social media today for a business is used really for three purposes: for customer support. Businesses in the beginning were concerned about getting negative feedback, but you can always turn negative feedback into a win if you address someone's complaint and handle it. It's also used for technical support. "I don't know how to use your product. I don't know how to use your toilet paper. Whatever. Help me." And same thing with sales. We consistently get asked, "Will this bring me more sales?" And in an indirect way, yes, through advertising, we can set up advertising accounts for our customers. And since we've been using Facebook advertising, we get calls from all over the country, and that's been really gratifying for us. And so same thing with our clients. So it's just really, truly about building cyber relationships in all ways. Would you say that, Wendy?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. Absolutely. You know, every day I'm getting in my email, "Join this particular social media, join this one, somebody wants to join with you on this." There. And so how do you know? I mean, there are so many out there, and so many more that seem to be developing: Flickr, TripIt, Bling Nation. I mean, how do you know what's the right one? Or do you even bother with these when people are inviting you to say, "Hey, would you like to be on my network?"
I would say that the great thing about social media is that there's a social media site for everybody. And geolocation sites is another huge big one. Your Foursquares, your Yelps, your Gorillas, your Facebook Places, and any location-based business, I highly recommend that you take a look at it. But what I say to that is that go on and check out the sites. See if they're right for you and if you're feeling comfortable, because not everybody likes Facebook. Not everybody likes Twitter. Not everybody likes, you know, and that's the whole thing about this. It's about, for a personal level, is what do you want to be social in? Where do you want to get your information? As a company standpoint, when they have those, I think every website should have a share it, and they should have your Facebook, your Twitter, your Dig, your which is not as used as often, and all of these different things that you can share. They have those little, we embed the icon boxes into the websites, and it's because everybody wants to be able to share the information they want based on what they're comfortable with. You know, there's Friendsters, there's so many, there's over 50. There's a LinkedIn in Europe that's the equivalent to LinkedIn here. You know, so there's so many places that you can go, and it's all about your comfortability level of where you want to be involved.
I'm glad you mentioned LinkedIn, because I just read an article that forget about Facebook, forget about other social media sites. If you're a business person, you need to be able to go to LinkedIn. Is that true? Is LinkedIn the number one business site for social media for business people?
For professional to professional, absolutely. There's different things that we utilize the different tools for. So LinkedIn really is professional to professional. There's no game. There's no, you know, all the other more social, quote-unquote, social fun aspects of Facebook and Twitter. It's a person-to-person thing that you do with LinkedIn. And the other thing is that LinkedIn's really great about it. A lot of people do job searches through LinkedIn. But the other thing is that it really can make you an expert in your field, because everybody who creates a profile on LinkedIn will then can start to look through their pictures, the questions that are asked for their field. So here you have, if you're like a marketing person, or if you're a real estate person, or if you're a travel person, there's groups that are on there, and people ask questions that they want other professionals to answer. And you can kind of then go through and show your expertise. You can, other people can see how many questions you answered, where your expertise lies, and it's a good way to get your name out there. And to get to know other people in the same field as you, to connect and network it that way too.
Now, can LinkedIn also be used from business to consumer, where the consumers are also business people? Does that work that way?
Let's go back to being social for a second. Just whether it's Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, nobody does business. If I walk into a business, let's say, forget about social media. I walk into the local convenience store, okay? My first representation is not that I'm walking into the business. It's the person behind the counter that I'm asking for whatever I need from. So, yes, you can do it, because everybody has buying power. So if I'm walking into and I'm professional to professional, that's who you're going to actually do business with. It's the idea of the company is great, and yes, people like brands and products and all of that. On the other side of that is that you want to get to know. It still boils down to the person who can make or break a deal is the person that you're actually talking to, whether it's business to consumer or consumer to consumer, because everybody's a consumer in some way. And so LinkedIn, yes, you can absolutely use it that way, because you're doing business with the person.
One creative way that I've used it, LinkedIn, I signed up for it probably about 3 or 4 years ago, perhaps right in the beginning, and I really didn't get it. And that's one of the troubles, I believe, in website design and websites. It takes a lot of studying to understand the concept and what that website is trying to sell or communicate. So I finally got it with the LinkedIn, and one of the early purposes I used it for was I was looking for a film producer. And so I had, at the time, I probably had 60 or 70 LinkedIn professional contacts, I sent out an email through LinkedIn to these 60 people, which the factorial factor came up to 20,000 contacts because they have contacts. And I literally got an email from someone who said, "My next door neighbor dates Nydia Hahn. What do you need?" I got an email from someone at Comcast, now TD Bank, saying, "We're on a photo shoot up in Maine. How can we help you?" So it was truly amazing that I was able to professional, put out the word, this is what I need, in a non-traditional way. I didn't have to go to the newspaper. I didn't have to go to Craigslist or whatever. I went that route and literally got deluged with information. Same thing at the college. My instructor, my dean said, "We need an instructor in a certain area." I said, "Oh, no problem. Let me go to LinkedIn." And next thing you know, she had videographers for her instructors. So it's a really powerful tool if you know how to use it.
And the beauty of that, too, is you didn't have to spend thousands on thousands of dollars advertising and actually looking for people to fit the bill. You do a lot with podcasting. Can people actually make some revenue from a podcast?
Yeah, with a lot of hard work. It's the same thing as building a newspaper audience. Your attempt with podcasting is you want to get a subscription-based followers. And the more followers you have, just like in a newspaper, the New York Times obviously can charge $100,000 for a full-page ad, and local newspapers compete with each other for ad space and ad pricing. Same thing with podcasting. There's many, people don't realize this, but there's many, many ways to make money with your podcast. And the phenomenal thing is, yes, there's startup costs, and yes, there's a base price to create a video, and video can sometimes be expensive, but you can take what's called your advertising expense and move it over to the income side just by what you said, Joanne. And there's several ways to do that, through direct sponsorship. One of my favorite podcasters is Garrison Keillor. He's a humorist and a storyteller from Lake Wobegon. And when I listened to him about 5 or 6 years ago, I'm a runner, so the value of podcasting to me 5 or 6 years ago was I didn't have to listen to the same Stevie Wonder album over and over again or the same book on tape or whatever. So the value of podcasting is it's fresh content every single day. So I started listening to The Morning Coach, who would help me get motivated for my business every morning. And I listened to Garrison Keillor. Then there's a few out there that are just very good information for what I do. There's Adobe Creative Suite, so I can learn a new trick in any graphics program in less than 4 minutes. I really got caught up into this podcasting thing 5 or 6 years ago, and then I noticed that my buddy Garrison Keillor, that he does several. He does the Prairie Home Companion. He does the Writer's Almanac every day, which is a piece of poetry. He tells you who was born in literary history today, and it gives me some networking information. Some of it's very funny. One episode in particular I remember was he talked about the guy who invented television, and his name escapes me right now. The gentleman that invented television back in the 50s never owned a TV and never permitted his children to watch TV. And I shared that with my own children, and they said, "Well, geez, Mom, what was on television in 1950? Who cares anyway?" But I have networking information. So as I continue to listen to Garrison Keillor, one day it stopped me in my tracks. The revenue came because he said, "And today's podcast has been brought to you by Honey Nut Cheerios." So he had your period.
Sponsorship.
Yeah, other sponsors. And today's podcast is brought to you by Lexus. So I started calling around a few podcasters, my favorite ones. One gentleman said, "Geez, I just turned away Carnival Cruises. They want to offer me $30,000 a month for my podcast." I said, "Not good enough, not the right advertiser." And so that's just one way. You can embed commercials of other businesses in your podcast at very reasonable prices, because the software out there, you don't have to hire a company in New York or Philadelphia to create your commercial. You can do it very reasonably priced. You can also, another way to make money, one of my other favorite podcasts is a Christian marriage coaching, and it's addictive because people call in. You don't have to worry about content with a podcast. You can have a remote podcast where people call in and say, Dr. White, hey, this is the problem. I have a mixed family. What do I do with the holidays coming up? So there's your content, and they make money because if you work your podcast the right way, you'll name your podcast after your website. And so when I'm out there jogging, I'll hear Garrison Keillor say, visit my website at, go buy my widget, go buy my my book, my latest book. I actually did buy his poetry book because even though I'm not a poetry person, some of the content he provided captured me. So you can send your listeners to your website, make money that way. You can also, Garrison Keillor does something also very creative. He batches the best of his podcasting. And he'll say, go to audible.com, go to iTunes, and for 99 cents, you can get the best of my 2010 series for 99 cents. So, I could probably spend the next half hour telling you, make money, because there's one other thing, is that there's actually websites out there that will connect you, the podcaster, with an advertiser. If you're not sales inclined, so it is truly amazing.
And from what you're talking about, it seems as though it's important to find the right advertiser that sort of meets what your needs are and what your company's needs are. Thank you for that.
Nailed it.
I've been looking at all the concerns that people have regarding privacy breaks on Facebook and others. How do people protect themselves and still be able to use Facebook and some of the other social media avenues?
I'm a big advocate of people having business pages to protect their privacy. Your personal profile is your personal profile. There is ways to go in and change your privacy settings in Facebook, and you should check them often because Facebook does add new things quite often. You think that you're private one week and you're not private the next because they may be changing the way that things go. But if you go into Facebook and you go where it says up on the top right corner, it says account. If you pull that down, there's a button that says, or there's a setting that says privacy settings. You would go in there and make yourself as private. The other thing that I'm a big advocate of is there's a lot of, obviously because of what I do and I like a lot of pages, people will friend me and I don't necessarily know who they are or where they found me on what page. There is a way to go in and every one of your friends, you can put them into what I call categories, and it could be just networking people. And you can set all your privacy, you can customize your privacy settings so that the people who you've networked with or your business associates, the people who your coworkers will only see so much of your life. So what I usually do is I recommend that everybody, and if you have 1,500 friends the first time that you go in and you actually set them in the right sections, you know, high school, whatever you want to call the categories, I recommend to go in. It'll take you a little bit of time the first time that you do it to put everybody into a category. But afterwards, as you get new friend requests, you can now just you can add them into that category, so it won't be that time-consuming. It'll take a little bit of time the first time, and then it'll be like a natural habit to just go and put them in the right category. But I'm really big on privacy because I have a tendency, because of the amount of pages that I have, I admin, you would be amazed how much things that people think that are private, they don't have their wall private, all their conversations are coming up. And there are listening tools out there, dashboards that can listen to all public conversations. So it is really important, especially if you're a parent with children, to make your profile, your private stuff private so that it's only your friends who can find out about these things. because, you know, there are marketers out there, and we have a tool to do it ourselves, and we utilize that, and we can find out information. If you're private on Facebook, then you don't have to worry about that. And as far as the business pages go, that's why it's important to have a business page, because that's where it's more of a open public information type thing. Every time you post from a business page, it is your business profile going up. You don't know who necessarily is running the account. It could be somebody on, you know, in the basement running it, or the CEO, and it gives everybody in the company who's an admin to that page equal rights and equal standing, because it's just the business putting the information out for Facebook.
Well, that's great. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I would highly recommend that everybody go in and play around with their privacy settings and set it so that in what they're comfortable with.
So what you're saying is to really make sure that they're setting their privacy, they're having their privacy settings so that they can still do business and interact with people and interface with people in social media. Doug, we talked about how podcasting can make some revenue for business owners. What about the other social media aspects? Can they actually increase people's financial goals?
Yes, I would say.
And may I address that?
Oh, go ahead.
One of the things that
Rita, go ahead.
One of the things that we mentioned earlier is social media is a great tool for customer service, sales, tech support. And sales, as I mentioned earlier, is always a big, big question. But what we're finding with this big freight train called social media is it's changing sales and marketing up, and it's turning it upside down. And what it's called is reverse marketing. So what big companies are doing, small companies, your local bakery, what they're doing is a form of reverse marketing. So if I'm a fan of, and Wendy and I saw this with just a very small bakery using Twitter, and bakery, this little mom-and-pop shop, put a sandwich board out front and said, follow me on Twitter. And you're saying to yourself, well, who cares about this little mom-and-pop bakery? But she was in a high-traffic area. And then she started saying on her tweets, hey, my blueberry muffins are coming out at 3 o'clock. Well, people started contacting her, and they would stop into the store. What's better than a hot muffin coming out of the oven at 3 o'clock or whatever? But then she started getting feedback that I'd rather have brownies. I'd rather have chocolate chip cookies. So what do you think she's doing? If she's getting more information about other baked goods than a blueberry muffin, she's reversing and she's planning her goods and her wares around her audience. And that's what larger companies are doing now. They're seeking this information through the different social networks and finding out what you, Joanne White, wants. You know, maybe it's a different color. Maybe it's a widget that does something better. So that's the phenomena in sales and marketing that we're seeing through this whole social media explosion.
And it seems that it happens so much more quickly than if you were polling people in a different way. So the response can be almost instantaneous, right?
Absolutely.
Great. So what is a geolocation site, and should businesses be utilizing them?
A geolocation site is when anybody who has a storefront, what they do is they would set up themselves on what's called a geolocation. They'd claim their business on a geolocation site. So some of the major ones are.
Hello?
It sounds like Wendy got disconnected somehow.
Okay.
A geolocation is pretty exciting in the sense that when you're visiting a restaurant, the one thing that this whole revolution of social media is doing is people are relying on their smartphones, and they have smartphones now. They don't rely as much as – and within 2 or 3 years, they believe that the desktop, the laptop are all really going to be mostly replaced with smartphones. So when you're at a retail as Wendy said, a storefront company, you are able to tell people, tell the rest of the world that this pizza shop that you visited is, it's smoking. It's the best pizza you've ever had. So that's what geolocation is about. It's all about yelping or screaming about someone's businesses when you're there. People do that. They go into Modell's. They go into retail stores and tell people where they are and what the customer service was like and what the product was like or if something's on sale. So that is a whole different phenomena that's been in the past couple of years, but it's starting to evolve and catch on, all tied to the smartphone.
So it sounds like it's growing. Let's see if Wendy's back on the air. Wendy, are you there? She's not here. Okay. What's the difference between a blog, a vlog, and a podcast, Rita?
Well, a blog is written word, and we are full-service advertising at iColor Studio. We do very high-end print media, web media, and multimedia, and our tagline is Madison Avenue Creativity at South Jersey Prices. So when we're planning a website for someone, it's very, very important that people find you. And so a blog is very, very important in the search engine optimization phase of it. We always encourage the key principles of a company when we're designing a website and planning the sitemap that they all have their own blog. It's a way of, for in lay terms, to really jam up the Google search engine, because Joanne White's blog will come up, her website will come up, everything related to Joanne White and her business in the web world will come up. So the more, obviously, the more blogs you have, there's a real code of ethics in blogging. You're not supposed to trash anyone. It's all the same rules apply to journalism. There's probably over 1,000 professional bloggers today, and they used to be, well, they still are. There's a house called Technorati, and Technorati houses all the professional bloggers and then some. And if you're in business, you need to be aware that there are people blogging about your business, and there are people blogging about your competitor's business. And as Wendy mentioned a few minutes ago, we use for our companies that employ this kind of or have this kind of need, we employ a dashboard, and we're able to do introductory marketing through listening to other people's blogs and bringing dissatisfied people over to a different company. So I mean, it's just mind-blowing. And professional bloggers do get paid to blog. And, again, it's mostly about the written word, although they do put in videos. A blog is more of a video blog. And, again, as I think I mentioned earlier, is that the blog is truly the father of podcasting. It became more media-rich as the years have gone on. Blogging is a really powerful tool. It's one this dashboard that we employ, Wendy and I, we're able to tell and help our clients at a glance who is a blogger of influence out there in the cyber world. And what that term means, and there's all new terms related to social media, chatter, mentions, influence. We can take a peek in this dashboard, and every time we show it to a CEO of a company, their mind is just blown. Whether someone's speaking in a blog in 16 foreign languages, we can translate it in a second. And we can find out what they're talking about, and we can find out how many people follow that blog. So in an instant, we can jump from this dashboard, we can jump into a blog, and we can discover that they have 75,000 people following them. So they're considered a 10-star influencer in the blog world. And obviously, you want to get your information about your company or about what you're doing to this influencer, because he has people or she has people following them. So it's, blogs are still very, very powerful tools out there. And then, again, the podcasting. Podcasting is, I would like to say podcast when people say to me, well, what's the difference between really, you know, a video podcast and a YouTube? A YouTube tends to be a one-up type of thing, and you can also get sponsorships. But a podcast tends to be more subscription-based, and it's based on an RSS feed. And to tell you the truth, I poll my students for the past 5 years at the college, and I say, how many people subscribe to a newspaper? And the numbers are dwindling, and the newspapers are getting scared because people today are sent an RSS feed where they can get their information. If you're the person that reads Dear Abby, the crossword puzzle, the local news, and that's all you want, you don't care about national news, you can set up RSS feeds. Or for me, I need to know what Apple is doing, the Macintosh world. I can click on their RSS feed, and I can send all that information to a feed reader. And so, and the same thing with my podcast that I love. So when I'm traveling to San Francisco or Chicago, I don't even need my computer. I just go to my feed reader account and put my blogs in there, put my podcasts in there, put my Dear Abby, whatever it is that floats my boat. My horoscope goes right to my feed reader, and it's all based. Everyone probably looks at this little icon on websites every day and may not realize what it is. It either says RSS, or it might say plus Net NewsGator, it might say plus PageFlakes, plus Google, plus Yahoo. They're all RSS feeds.
You know, Rita, it's amazing. It's changing the face of, like you talked about in terms of the print, it's just changing the face of all sorts of businesses. One of my colleagues sent me something that says that 1 in 3 Americans aged 12 plus and 2/3 of teens and 18 to 24-year-olds now have a profile on a social networking site. And so a lot of businesses who are interested in podcasting or social media who want to actually attract the different age groups need to make sure that they're a vital force and a vital source on these social media sites. Do you recommend podcasting for everyone?
Podcasting is not for everyone, but if you have an idea that has a vertical market, it's really ideal because it's a great magnet for sponsorship. If you, we've spoken in the past year with a prospective client that does only, I don't want to say catering, but food services for canine dogs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a really great vertical market because someone that would sponsor her, a typical sponsorship would be, let's say, a PetSmart or people that are just gaga over animals. So a really smart podcaster has a narrow audience. And, you know, even something as simple as men getting together on a Saturday morning and fixing Corvettes. There's a lot of hobbyists out there. Their typical sponsor, would be car part people for Corvettes. So a lot of podcasts are very narrow. A lot of podcasts are for business purposes. Like, a podcast can be used internally for a company for training purposes. Colleges out in Stanford University. Colleges started out there in California several years ago, and I said, "Oh, where were they when I was in school when I needed to see that that physics lecture twice?" But think about it: if the professor is podcasting her series of lectures, and you have a password to get in, I believe you can go to Yale and Harvard now through podcasting for free.
That's amazing.
It is amazing, and the beauty of that is, Joanne, if it is a lecture of a very difficult subject, we all know this today in education that you're either an auditory learner, a kinesthetic learner, a visual learner. You could repeat that podcast in the middle of the night, listen to it when you jog. I mean, it's just listen to it while you drive. I take my I find most of my podcasts. You had mentioned this to me yesterday. Rita, where do you find your podcasts? I go to iTunes, although there are other podcasts, what they're called aggregators out there. But generally, I go to iTunes. So if you are a podcaster, you want to make sure that you've uploaded and what's called tagged properly your podcast. It's just like a website. you want to make sure that your website has meta tags and descriptives and all kinds of fun things like that so people can find. Same thing with the podcast. So
you know, there are so many new entrepreneurs. I think that we're really breaking records in terms of many people that are branching out, maybe because they've lost their jobs or their jobs have been outsourced or whatever because of economic reasons, and people are creatively coming up with new ways to be in business. What would you recommend to entrepreneurs who want to get into the social media system? What's the best way to do it?
Wendy, you want to take this?
Yes, Wendy, you're back.
Yeah, no, I've been back. I've been listening. We had a client that we actually deal with a lot of businesses who are startup companies. They come to us because we can do the full tilt of the social media and the website design and everything. And a lot of times what we'll do is while the website is being built, we'll say, okay, let's roll with your social media. Let's get that started. Because really it's a great test market if you have the ability to get fans, if you have the ability to ask engaging questions, if you have the ability to see if people are like sitting there waiting and ready for your website or your startup business to come, it's a great place to actually start. We had a scenario where a company came to us and said, we have this great idea, we want to see if it's going to roll, and we need to know who's going to buy this. And we said, okay, we're going to try some of this indirect marketing. So we created the Facebook page and the social media buzz, and we started every day because we weren't sure who the company's advertisers could be or would be. We'd go up on the page and just ask simple questions like, do you like this pizza place or this pizza place? This was the website was for, it was to sell advertisements on their website and text message triggers. So in order for the website to know who to go sell their advertising space to on their website, we started to ask these questions, and everybody would kind of weigh in on their thoughts every day. And then the company would have had a list of, okay, we asked what pizza place you like today, and five people said this pizza place, so now you know that you're already going to get conversation around this pizza place. Now you have the ability to go say, I already got people, pizza place, come and buy from me.
It's so incredible, really. Does having a lot of followers mean that it's important in terms of social media? Does it really increase your business, or is it just having a lot of followers? What's the importance of that?
No, it's really just having a lot of followers. I'm not going to say that because everybody wants to know who else likes your page. Everybody wants to kind of – we're all nosy as just human beings. So it's neat in the way that the more connections you have, you can go like, oh, I like that page. Maybe I see my friends here and I'll go like that. That's very important. It's almost the key thing to the open graph. Idea of drawing in more people, but it's not the end all. And I know that a lot of people get caught up with that. Oh my goodness, I have this many followers. That's great. How much engagement are you doing with them? Because
right.
If you're not actually having engaged conversations with them, you could have, you know, we have some people who, and again, it goes back to those words, influence, clout. You can have thousands and thousands of people, and nobody's recommending you. Nobody's retweeting your information. Nobody's doing anything because there's no engagement and it's just kind of flat. And I can pretty much go onto Facebook accounts and Twitter accounts and go, these are flat. And you can see why the difference of the influence. Followers are good because it's a start. It's a start to where you can engage. But if you don't follow through, and somebody, I was doing a seminar at last night, and somebody said to me last night, well, if you do a Facebook page and kind of leave it empty, is that as good as just doing, you know, is that the same as doing nothing, or is it at least something? And my answer is that it's, if you don't have an engaged Facebook page, if you don't have an engaged Twitter account or any of the other social media networks that you're using, it's really halfway done. It's not really going to give you what you need for down the line ROI. It's not going to give you down. It's not going to get the people to notice you, because what happens is every time you post, let's use Facebook for an example first. If I post on Facebook one account gets so many things, is that if I post on Facebook and now there's a lot of engagement after that post for that business, and let's say, Joanne, you haven't logged in a week, but you go on and it'll say, like, top news. Well, what's the top news? If you've liked, you know, how does that kind of stream live to you if you like 500 pages? Well, guess what's going to show up first? The most engaged pages. The ones that have no comments, nothing's going on, nobody cares, nobody, and it's not being updated, people are doing straight marketing, that's not necessarily the ones that are going to come into your top tier after you haven't logged in for 2 days or a week or whatever. What's going to stay up there are the ones with all the comments underneath, all that engagement, because that's how Facebook is kind of aggregating to show you what you're going to see on that screen.
So what you're talking about is engagement. That engagement is really the key here. And when you're talking about engagement, it means that you, as the person who has the Facebook account or profile, you're the one that has to make sure that you're attending to it by writing and giving feedback or utilizing some folks like the two of you to do it for you, right?
Exactly. And Twitter is the same way, in the sense that you can have 1,000 followers. If you have nobody talking to you on it, it's really not going to do what you need. And Twitter is a little bit different animal. You can, on a marketing standpoint, you've got like 30 seconds to get your information out there. It's a very paced thing. But go through, and you can tell who is just by looking at the accounts. We have a back-end way to do it, but I can look at an account and go, okay, I can look by and just go, they're just putting URLs out to what's called a landing page somewhere because they just want people to click through. And there's no conversation going on at all. It's just straight marketing, straight, like, buy here, buy here, buy here. And then I can look at another account and go, okay, maybe they're doing that. They're doing that because they need to push their information out. But in between that, they're still having engaged conversations. It's not just go by here, go by here, go by here. They're actually engaging people. Funny story, that's how I actually met somebody in Finland who actually likes all of our pages now, and it was through engagement on Twitter. I happened to announce a new client, and they congratulated me, and now we have a relationship, and he does social media in Finland. So that's those ideas that it doesn't have to be anything great strokes, but it has to be somewhat of engagement to tie people in to say, okay, come and look at over here because we're going to actually talk to you. We're actually going to do something with this information. So it's really all about connection.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. It truly is. It's all about connect. It's about taking what you would do in real life, face to face, and bringing it to another atmosphere. But you're still doing. It's all about building relationships.
Is there any room for straight marketing these days? And I mean, for businesses? Or?
Oh, absolutely. And may interject.
Rita, go ahead. Go ahead.
And piggyback on what Wendy just said. She's being very humble. Through some of our social media campaigns for one customer, before the website, Wendy mentioned this a few minutes ago, before the website was even published, we attracted the attention through Facebook of an ABC affiliate television reporter in the Philadelphia area who wanted to do a whole story about this new firm and this new entrepreneur. So that was extremely exciting for us. And Wendy also attracted Perez Hilton. We were running a donation campaign for the Sunshine Foundation, and Wendy was able to connect. And Perez Hilton put our campaign to collect money for children with special needs and who want to go places, very similar to the other foundation, which escapes me. It's not awful. Sunshine Foundation, the other one, Wendy.
Make-A-Wish.
Oh, Make-A-Wish, very similar to Make-A-Wish.
Right.
We were able to get that information from social media onto Perez Hilton, who's like the hottest gossip columnist. All people between the age of 20 and 35 follow him every single day. So there's a lot of exciting things that can happen in social media through proper engagement, through proper chatter, that drives just derives comments and engagement with the other friends or the likes on the page.
It sounds really so powerful, and from what you both are talking about, and you're both so knowledgeable, I actually received an email the other day that says something, some headline that Facebook is going to replace Google. Is that true? I mean, is that what's to come?
Well, what's happening is that Facebook is getting more into the, they've just partnered up, well, actually, they've been partners with Bing. Facebook is, a lot of people are using, instead of going to Google, not everybody, you know, people are still going to find time for Google. They have their own social media campaign, a site. I don't particularly care for it, but, you know, it's there, and it's called Google Buzz. And so there's all these things that Google does, yes. But Facebook recently just partnered again with Bing, and what's going to happen, and this is just kind of outrageous, of this kind of open graph, what are you doing socially, who are you talking to on your personal profiles, Bing is developing a site now that will happen based on, like, if I like Dr. Joanne White's page, and Rita doesn't like that page, but 10 of Rita's friends like Dr. Joanne White, and somebody puts in a therapist, counselor, or even your background, whatever it is, because so many of Rita's friends like your page, that will now push you to the top of Bing. That will be pushing you in the development side. So it's going to be based, the search engine for Bing is going to start being based on what your friends like. It will not be on straight SEO through the meta tags and all that stuff that it used to be on. It will be based on more, okay, what's going on in your social media. Google now has, when you Google something, depending on if it's a keyword or whatever, it will stream live from Twitter.
You have to make sure that you don't tick off any people, that you really keep friends, because it sounds like when there are friends, they can help make or break you on a particular
right.
site. We're coming in towards the end.
Okay.
Now finish what you were going to say. I was going to say
that when you start a business page, it is so important to get your personal friends engaged in it, because they're going to be your biggest advocates to continue to share out that page.
That's great. So any last words? We have a couple of more minutes, and I want to just make sure, how do people get a hold of you both? Because I'm sure that our listeners will want to know more. You've really given me a whole lot of information and actually have demystified everything for me. It seems to be so much more. But what do you want to end? What do you want to tell these listeners about finally, and how can they get a hold of you?
There's several ways, but the easiest is 856-768-3598 or Rita@iColorStudio.com, and that's lowercase I, Wendy@iColorStudio.com, or find us on Facebook. There's the Podjucator Facebook page, Social Signatures, which is our product line for Facebook and all social media. And the Podjucator and iColor Studios Facebook page. We're on there daily, and so there's many ways to reach us, and, of course, through our website, iColorStudio.com. This has been great.
Well, you've both been wonderful guests, and thank you for sharing your expertise. We've been talking to Rita Christensen and Wendy Maganero, partners at iColor Studio, which is a full-service advertising agency, and iColor Studio provides all things digital, including print, web, multimedia, social media, podcasting, audio and video services, as well as marketing and affiliate marketing support. They can help you harness the power of the internet and digital design to transform paper visions into digital masterpieces. Thank you so much, both of you, for being on the show and for sharing your knowledge and your time with our listeners.
Thank you, Joanne. We really appreciate this.
Have a great day.
Have a great day. to you and everyone out there, enjoy your day and stay tuned next week to listen to Power Your Life.
Been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with your host and author, Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the Upbeat Show to grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again by visiting divatoolbox.com and blogtalkradio.com. Thank you for sharing your day with us, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.